ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
त्वया भिरुनायोत्स्ये
युधि विक्लवते
जसा
मथुरां स्वपुरीं त्यक्त्वा समुद्रं शरणं गतः न त्वयाभिरुनायोत्स्ये युधि विक्लवते
जसा
मथुरां स्वपुरीं
त्यक्त्वा
समुद्रं शरणं गतः न त्वयाभिरुनायोत्स्ये युधि विक्लवते
जसा
मथुरां स्वपुरीं
त्यक्त्वा
समुद्रं शरणं गतः
Yotsye,
I will fight.
Yudhi,
in battle.
Viklava,
impaired.
Tejasa,
whose strength.
Maturam,
Matura.
Swa,
your
own.
Purim,
city.
Tyaktva,
leaving.
Samudram,
to the ocean.
Sharanam,
for shelter.
Gata,
gone.
But I will not fight with you, Krishna, for you are a coward. Your strength abandoned you in the midst of battle, and you fled your own capital of Mathura to take shelter in the sea.
Ayam tu vayasatulyo nati sattvo na me samaha Arjuno nabaved yodha bhimastulya balo mama.
As for this one, Arjuna, he is not as old as I, nor is he very strong. Since he is no match for me, he should not be the contender. Bhima, however, is as strong as I am.
Iti yuktva bhima senai pradaya mahatim gadam vityam swayam adaya nirjagama purad bahi.
Having said this, Jarasandha offered Bhimasena a huge club, took up another himself, and went outside the city.
Tatasame kale biro samyuktav itaretaram jagnatur vajrakalpabhyam gadabhyam ranadurmadao.
The two heroes thus began battling each other on the level fighting grounds outside the city. Maddened with the fury of combat, they struck each other with the lightning bolts, with their lightning bolt clubs.
Mandalani vichitrani savyam dakshinameva cha charato susubhe yudham natayor ivar rangano.
As they skillfully circled left and right like actors dancing on a stage, the fight presented a magnificent spectacle. Purport. Jarasandha and Bhima here demonstrate their expertise in the use of clubs. Thus it can be understood that both fighters were fearless and steady, even in the rage of battle.
Om Agyan Timirandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tatati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Juta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavanscha Sri Rupam Sakrajataham Sahagana Raghunatham Vitham Tham Sajivam Sadvaitham Sadvatutham Parichana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Patahan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kamsana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamani Hari Priyai Vamsha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna
Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama
Hare Rama
We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 72, The Slaying of the Demon Jarasandha, Text 31 through 35. In the previous verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, we learn of what has transpired to bring us to the culmination of this great battle we are reading today. Shukadev Goswami describes the peaceful, beautiful life of Krishna in Dwarka and his daily activities, where he was not only setting an example for everyone by his own actions, but he was revealing the truth about himself. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita that what great people do, common people naturally follow. Whatever standards they set, the world pursues. What is the standard of success? What is the standard of greatness? There are eternal principles, universal principles, and there are times within our history where they are completely overshadowed by very relative, temporary, selfish principles. To realize the eternal nature of our own self, to utilize this body and mind for the actual purpose of our true self. And that purpose is to love God, to love Krishna, and to be an instrument of Krishna's love in whatever we do, whoever we're with, in whatever situation may come. Ahoitiki apratihata. The Bhagavatam explains that love is not something that is according to convenience. Love is something so deep. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita tells that the spiritual practices and the character of someone like Raghunath Das Goswami were like the lines in stone. Not lines that we draw in stone, but the lines that are naturally there in stone. From its outermost surface to its innermost core, that line is inseparable from its own existence. And it may be a sunny day, maybe a rainy day, but nothing can erase the lines in stone. So Dharma, actual love of God, is tested by how we sustain our essential spiritual principle in all circumstances. Whether we are tested in a happy way or in a very, very challenging way. How do we learn to actually live by these principles? How do we understand what is the goal of life and how to achieve it? Mahajano yena gatasa panta. By following in the footsteps of great personalities. Because by their actions, by their words, they establish the standard of what is actually of value. When people think that fame, a large bank balance, acquisition of many properties, physical strength, winning championships, when people think that these things are great, there is some greatness there, but it's fleeting because it's here today and gone tomorrow. And we may or may not even achieve it in the meanwhile. But when people think that these are the things that are great, when this is the standard, it generates greed, selfish lust, anger when we don't get our way, envy when we don't have as much as someone else, arrogance when we have more than someone else, and such illusion. And it is these very qualities that obscure the real goal of life, the real happiness that everyone is seeking. And when people who are put in positions of being influential and great in the eyes of people, when this is what motivates them, kama, krodha, lust, anger, envy, pride, greed, illusion, then that's what happens to the public. Doesn't matter how I do it, I have to make money. I have to get power. I have to get fame. I have to get sex life. I have to get intoxicated. I have to enjoy these senses in a way that's superior to others. Then the whole world becomes mad. The Srimad Bhagavatam tells that when people are so much attached to these sensual goals in life, and sensual means physical senses, the eye to see, to hear, to touch, to smell, to taste, and the subtle senses. The subtlest of the senses is the ego. Profit, adoration, distinction. When these things are used for the purpose in life, there's humility. But when these things overshadow the goal of life, they become the very source of our suffering. And this is the way material existence is prone to lead us. That the very thing that we work so hard for happiness is what brings us the worst suffering in due course of time. So it is very important that our heroes are people who lead us in the right direction. So when Krishna comes to the world, sometimes he really manifests his role as Bhagavan, as the supreme cause of all causes. He showed his Virat Rupa to Arjuna. He engaged in the most beautiful loving pastimes of the Raslila with gopis. But at other times, he speaks Bhagavad Gita, but he also exemplifies it. When Narada Muni came to visit Krishna in Dwarka, he saw Krishna performing so many different duties in so many different places simultaneously. And in particular chapter we are referring to, it describes how Krishna, he woke up really early every morning. He surrounded himself with auspicious things. Because how we start our day very much is like the foundational consciousness that will prevail through the day. So he would meditate. He would offer charity to holy people. He would see very, very peaceful, beautiful, auspicious things like cows. He would do worship in the temples. He would take bath in very nice, fragrant waters. This is how he would begin every day. And after that, he would go to what we would call work. He would go to Sudharma. So he performed his duties. He performed his duties very conscientiously. But his first duty, every day, for many hours, was his spiritual practices, his meditation, his puja, his yoga, and his seva, giving and charity to. And then he would go to Sudharma, and whatever was going to happen is what happened. But he was teaching us, if we want to actually perform our duties for the right purpose without being seriously distracted by endless distractions, then we need to begin our day by really strongly connecting ourselves to our souls, to God, to Krishna. And challenges and distractions, they will come. During the monsoon rainy season, especially here in Mumbai, where it usually does rain, we shouldn't think, oh, it won't rain during this 4 months. We know it will. So our comfort is not whether it rains or not. It's whether we prepare before the rainy season by fixing our roofs and getting a nice umbrella. Yes, then when the rain comes, we deal with it. We can go on with our duties nicely. So every kind of distraction, every kind of disturbance is inevitable. We must prepare ourselves. So on one particular day, Krishna is sitting in Sudharma, and a Brahmin comes, a messenger. This messenger came from a distant place. And he was quite desperate. He had a message from 20,800 kings who were all suffering miserably. They were in prison, being tortured, and on a regular basis they were being sacrificed, they were being killed. He said Jarasandha, who was a very, very powerful king of the Magadha district, he conquered all these other kingdoms, and he took the kings and the princes and made them his prisoners and slaves, and subjected them to total poverty and suffering. Was constantly filling their minds with fear. The messenger went into some detail of how they were suffering and how regularly Jarasandha was performing puja by severing their heads and offering them on the altar. There are so many different ways people interpret religion. This is not something new. It's always been. So many ways people think that they can please God. And it's usually based on the motivations that people have. The messenger told Krishna, these kings are completely taking shelter of you alone because nothing else can save them. And just at that moment, Narada Muni comes in. And Krishna is so happy to see Narada Muni. All the Yadus, they stand up and they offer obeisances, and Krishna offers obeisances and gives Narada Muni a beautiful seat. And Krishna said, please tell me, how are the Pandavas? And Narada Muni tells that Yudhisthira Maharaj, he desires to perform the Rajasuya Yajna. This is called the king of all sacrifices. Only an emperor of the entire planet can perform it. And he wants to honor and worship you in the Agra Puja, to show his love and devotion for you and to reveal that to the world. So please come. He needs you to come to Indraprastha right away for this Rajasuya Yajna. So Krishna's being invited to two different places at the same time. And the Yadus, because everyone, according to their natures, have different ways of seeing what's important. The Yadus, they're warriors who are protecting society. So they're very enthusiastic. Let's go fight Jarasandha. Free the world from the disease of his evil. He's a terrorist. And let's free all those kings. And at the same time, Narada Muni, who's a Brahmin, who's a saint, he's thinking, no, no, go to Yudhisthira Maharaj and perform this nice puja of Rajasuya. Krishna did not want to disappoint anyone. even God is put in these situations. And at the same time, he's showing not only the nature of his love for his devotees, but he's showing by his example. So he doesn't want to make the decision. He turns to his dear friend Uddhava and says, "Uddhava, you are my dearest friend, and you have such deep wisdom according to time, place, and circumstance. Tell me what I should do." Uddhava himself is a Yadu, but at the same time, he has great honor and respect for whatever Narada Muni tells him. So Uddhava creates a very beautiful balance. He doesn't go black and white. He goes in the middle. This is his incredible skill of human relationships. He says, in order to perform the Rajasuya Yajna, one has to accept, all the other kings in the world have to accept subordination. Jarasandha will never, ever, ever accept subordination under anyone. So therefore, fighting him is inseparable from the Rajasuya Yajna. So go to Indraprastha, spend time, a little time with Yudhisthira, and then how? Jarasandha is so powerful. How to defeat him? In his own very perverted and materialistic and selfish and envious way, he's devoted to the Brahmins. Because he's intelligent. If we see the really powerful people of the past, Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, they were all devoted to the Brahmins. Because they knew that it was really bad luck if they didn't. And they would, and if they honored them properly, they would get much power. So Jarasandha was, in his own way, in the modes of passion and ignorance, very much devoted to Brahmins. And every day, he would personally open the doors of his palace to meet them and give them in charity anything they wanted. So have Bhima, who's the only person on the planet who's equal to him for battle. Have Bhima disguise himself as a Brahmin and ask to fight. That was Uddhava's. Everyone was happy with what Uddhava said. Partially. Everyone would have been happier if he sided with them. But everyone was quite happy that with all of their issues were addressed. And Krishna accepted this as perfect. So Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna in desperation is turning to Krishna. Vedaishta sarve rahameva vedyo vedanta kritveda vadeva chaham. The Gita tells that Krishna is the source of all knowledge. He's the compiler of the Vedas. He's the knower of the Vedas. And all the Vedas, he is to be known. He knows everything past, present, future. But he's asking his devotee for advice. This is loving relationship. Krishna doesn't need advice from a philosophical perspective. But from the perspective of bhakti or love, he actually does need advice. by his own will, he accepts that role just to give glory to his devotee and to give a very special loving service to his devotee and to taste the sweetness of the love of that devotee. So Krishna is very happy. And he, whatever Uddhava said, he is ready to do. And wonderful chariots are arranged. And from Dwarka, Krishna and queens and so many go to Indraprastha. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, who is king, he comes running to where Krishna arrives, along with his brothers and the ministers and the Brahmins, and they all welcome Krishna. And after a few months of Krishna just having a wonderful time with everybody in Dwarka, in Indraprastha, with the Pandavas, he asked Yudhisthira Maharaj what is his wish? And Yudhisthira Maharaj tells that I want to perform the Rajasuya. I do not want to perform this to become famous or powerful. I don't want to perform this to conquer anyone or anything, because this is the king of all worship ceremonies or sacrifices. And the devas will come. Brahma, Shiva, Indra. The sages will come. Princes and kings from all over the world will come. I want them all to understand that myself as the emperor is simply your humble servant. I want them to, everyone to understand that when you water the root of the tree, that water goes to every leaf. People in this world, because you're coming in such a accessible way as Krishna, people take you to be something ordinary. Sometimes they criticize you. Sometimes they make all sorts of demands from you, and if they're not satisfied, then they become envious of you. This breaks my heart. Let everyone understand your greatness. Yudhisthira Maharaj, he was such a leader that he considered every single one of his citizens to be his own child. Yudhisthira Maharaj was willing to give his life and everything he had for the well-being of everyone. Just like Maharaj Shibi was willing to give up his life to protect one pigeon. Ranti Dev was willing to give up his life just to give nourishment to one completely rejected outcast person from the jungle or a pack of dogs. Bali Maharaj was willing to give up his entire kingdom and become a prisoner to please this little dwarf who came to beg from him. Maharaj Harishchandra, to please the great sage Vishwamitra, he was willing to undergo such unbelievable, incredible difficulties in his life. And how each and every one of these people attained the highest ultimate perfection. And they were all kings. Today, Or throughout history, we find so many kings who just want to rule over people. You are my subjects. But these kings, their mood was, I am your servant. And they didn't just say it on campaign speeches. They lived it. Because anyone can say, I'm just here to serve everyone, to make you happy. But you see, in these great scriptures, every one of these people were tested to the limits beyond imagination, and they maintained the integrity of their dharma. So Yudhisthira is like that. He loves his citizens. He cares for his citizens. He's not demanding of them. Whatever laws he's making, whatever taxes he's excising, whatever decisions he makes, is with loving care for every one of his citizens, even among the least of them. To protect the animals, protect the trees, and to protect every particular variety of humanity from injustice, from wickedness, from everything. But because he loves them, just providing for them a material paradise in his eyes, for all of them to live, no poverty, no crime, everyone's good health care, for him, it's a total failure. Yes, he was providing all that, but that's a failure. Because they're going to die. And they didn't understand the goal of life. The goal of life is to help people understand that they're the eternal soul. To know God and to love God. That's beyond birth, beyond death. If I can't give them that, I failed as a king. And see how he's planning to give them that. He's not ordering them or punishing them if they don't follow his religious system. He's setting an example. He's not just laying the law, worship Krishna or die. Worship Krishna or you have to pay triple the taxes. He could do all that stuff if he wants, but he doesn't. What is he doing? He wants the Rajasuya so that everyone, he has practically total faith in everyone because of his goodness to them. Because he provides everybody what they need. And practically nobody in his kingdom have any greed because they're satisfied. Greed is a product of dissatisfaction. So when people are actually happy in their situation and they're happy within, there's no need to be greedy. You just want to give. When you're happy, you just want to give. That's the test if you're actually happy. So in Indraprastha, everyone was really provided everything. But he wanted to show by his example. Because he earned people's love. He earned people's trust because he loved them. People don't love you because of your power or your wealth or your intellectual prowess. People love you because you love them and because they see you love others. then people, their feelings come from the heart, not just their minds. So they trusted Yudhisthira. They saw he had no motivation except us to help us. My husband, my wife, my children, everyone is so completely protected and provided for because of his loving care. So he earned that. And now he wanted to see the ultimate success of his life, the Rajasuya. The most difficult form of religious worship that there is the Rajasuya. You have to subjugate the entire world. Not conquer over it, but gain the faith and trust of everyone in it. That's the conquering. And when the culmination came, at the highest point of the Rajasuya, he was going to humbly worship Krishna and present to everyone, he's the root of the tree. If he's satisfied, everything is fulfilled. Samsidhyat Hari Toshanam. He's the ultimate goal of life. He wanted to establish forevermore the beauty, the sweetness, and the mercy of Krishna, of God. So Krishna was very happy. This was Yudhisthira Maharaja's compassion. He understood what was truly of value, and because he loved his citizens, he wanted them to understand that deeply through his example and through his words. So Krishna said, in order to perform Rajasuya, every single king on the planet has to humble themselves before you. So he sent Sahadev, Nakula, Arjuna, and Bhima to the north, south, east, and west. And our acharyas explained they didn't just go and conquer them and take over. They just went. Maharaj Yudhisthira wants to perform Rajasuya. That means in honor of him, you can have your kingdom. You can have your subjects in your palaces. But by giving some contribution for the Rajasuya sacrifice, that is the way you can express that ultimately you're subordinate to him. And you're honoring him as the emperor. And everyone gladly did it. And if they weren't willing to do it, then there would be a fight. So they all came back and said, everyone in the world, practically everyone, was very happy. You want to be under the protection of somebody so magnanimous and so compassionate and so devoted and so powerful in that sense. Except Jarasandha. And Krishna, he said, let me tell you, Yudhisthira Maharaj, what I heard from Uddhava. We're citing Krishna, but Krishna's citing Uddhava. He said, Uddhava told me that Jarasandha is a very great devotee of Brahmins, so Bhima should dress as a Brahmin and beg him. And because he gives charity to Brahmins, Bhima should beg him for a battle. And then the world will be freed of Jarasandha. So Yudhisthira Maharaj, whatever you say, Krishna, is very nice. So Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhima went to Giribraja, the kingdom of Jarasandha. And it was the particular time of the day when he would open his doors to give in charity to whoever came, especially Brahmins. He would, what do you want? I'll give you anything you want. And he would give it. He was really cruel and selfish and greedy, but at the same time he was really charitable. He had a very complex mental disorder in that sense. But to some degree everybody does in this world. But he was in a very extreme position to have such complexities in his mind. He was very focused. He knew what he wanted, and he knew how to get it. So as he was giving charity, Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhima disguised themselves as Brahmins, and they came to his door. He said, "Yes, how may I serve you? Ask for whatever you like." And Krishna spoke, and he started glorifying great kings. Great kings like you, they are willing to tolerate even the most intolerable situations. They are willing to make even the most difficult sacrifices for the higher cause of Dharma. So whatever we ask you, you should not refuse. And he gave so many examples of other great kings, how they would never refuse what was asked of them. And while they're talking, he's looking a little more carefully. They don't look like Brahmins. They have on their shoulders the marks of a bow, the string of a bow that they keep over their shoulder. And he looked at their bodies and Bhima. Arjuna. And he was thinking, these must be really pathetic. They're definitely warriors. They're not Brahmins, but they must really be in desperation because warriors don't disguise themselves as Brahmins and come begging. That's a complete humiliation to a Kshatriya. He was wondering, who are these people? But still, he was, in his mind, he was ready to give them whatever they wanted. Even if they want my head, I'll give that to them. I will not refuse. He said, "What would you like?" "Anything I will give you." And Krishna said, then he revealed himself. He said, "I'm actually Krishna." And this is Bhima. And this is his brother Arjuna. And we want to fight you. Jarasandha, this leads us to today's verses. And I guess because I have to go somewhere, I'll have to end class right at the beginning of class. I've led up to today's verses. I was about to speak, but I'm out of time. Jarasandha, he's very noble in his own... His purpose of being noble is completely distorted and corrupted. But he's noble. And the fact is, he really achieved what nobody else could practically achieve in this world because he was like that. But ultimately, because of his envy and his arrogance, everything, no matter who you are and what you achieve, it's all going to be taken away. So Jarasandha said, Krishna, you're not fit to fight with me. Last time I saw you, you ran away from me in fear. You are a coward. It's below my dignity to fight with you. Just see how blinded he is. After the liberation of Kamsa, the two daughters of Jarasandha came crying to him, and he attacked Krishna with the intention of completely destroying the entire Yadu dynasty along with Krishna in revenge. He went to Mathura, where Krishna and the Yadus were living, and surrounded the city with hundreds and hundreds and thousands of soldiers and infantries and weapons. And Krishna came out single-handedly and defeated his entire army and then captured Jarasandha like somebody just captures like a stray dog. And just say, I've defeated you, I've defeated everyone, now go. And he let him go. And that made Jarasandha even more angry. You see, if Krishna would have killed him, there would have been some dignity. But Krishna just let him go, like, you know, just get out, you know. Useless, just get out. So he got hundreds and thousands of more soldiers and attacked again, and Krishna did the same thing. Defeated all the soldiers, captured Jarasandha, said, get out. He did it 17 times. Yes, 17 times in a row. Because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya duduskritam dharma samstapanaradaya sambhavami shuke shuke. I descend to protect the innocent, annihilate evil, and reestablish the principles of religion. So there were these very, very demoniac, arrogant rulers who were plundering and torturing people in so many places, but they all were subordinate to Jarasandha because he was more than any of them could ever be as far as being powerful and evil. So when he said, you come, you fight for me, they would all come. So Krishna didn't have to go anywhere. They were all coming to him. Jarasandha was bringing and bringing and bringing and bringing. And he would let him go, knowing he'll bring more. And then he'd let him go and bring more. And on the, I believe it was the 18th time, while he was out there, Kalyavana came on one side. I'm not going to go into the details because of time. Jarasandha came on another side. And Krishna gets a message from Rukmini that she's about to be, you know that story. He had to save Rukmini. And Krishna could see Mathura is not a very safe place. So what did he do? He just went outside, and Jarasandha saw him coming and said all kinds of arrogant words to Krishna. And Krishna just kind of walked away, but he walked really fast. And Jarasandha chased after him, and Krishna just walked more and more and more. Krishna and Balaram, they ran away from Jarasandha's perspective. They actually just, they had their own purpose. They climbed a mountain. And Jarasandha lit the entire mountain on fire. And from the other side of the mountain where he didn't see it, Krishna jumped off the mountain and went to Dwarka, went to protect his devotee. And then he established the beautiful kingdom of Dwarka. So Jarasandha, he's seeing Krishna as a coward. This is one of the favorite pastimes. Devotees, there are so many stories of Krishna defeating different asuras. But the name Ranchor is very precious to devotees. Ranchor means he ran away from the battlefield. One of the most popular temples in Dhakur or in Gujarat is millions of people go there to honor and offer their love to Ranchor, he who ran away from battle. This is an opulence of Krishna's renunciation. He's willing to be misunderstood and humiliated and accused of being a coward to protect his devotee. But because he's willing to do that, devotees love him for it. Ranchorji Bhagavan ki jai. So while we're saying jai, Jarasandha is saying, you are a coward. It's below my dignity to even consider fighting with you. And Arjuna, he's just a little person. Look at his size. And his strength is not comparable to mine. It would be an insult to my dignity to even bother fighting Arjuna. But Bhima, he is equal to me in strength in every way. I will accept battle with Bhima. Jarasandha gives Bhima a huge club. And he picks up an exactly the same big club. And they start fighting. And that's where we begin today. They were hitting each other with these clubs. They were hitting every limb of their bodies. And their bodies were so strong, and the clubs were like massive iron clubs. It sounded like the most reverberating thunder in an enormous storm every time one of them hit the other with their club. Even the best special effects of Hollywood or Bollywood could never give this experience. Literally, Jarasandha would hit Bhima and Bhima would hit Jarasandha. That was a sound, but it was probably 10 million times louder and more terrifying. It was terrifying. You're laughing. And they were pounding each other's limbs with these clubs, and they were going in circles, and it was like ballet. These are really warriors. What kind of yogis were they? They had mystic powers. What type of flexibilities their bodies had. They were going in the air. They were going in the ground. They were going in circles. They were like dancing in circles, beating each other and dodging each other. And they were both really angry. And as is described in today's purport, that the nature of their Kshatriya spirit, they were completely enlivened with this fight. They had absolutely no fear. Neither of them were thinking, what if I die? Who's going to take care of my children? They were just totally absorbed in the moment, in the fight. One was fighting. His motivation, simply to satisfy his own insatiable greed and pride. And the other was fighting in total humility as a loving servant of the Lord. So their motives were absolutely different. One was materialistic, one was spiritual. One was dharma, one was adharma. But they were fighting with the same clubs. They were both making the same maneuvers. They were both making the same crashing sounds against each other. It went on for 27 days. But the way they did it in those days, they began at sunrise and started fighting. And they didn't take a break. They didn't have like tea breaks or lunch breaks. They just fought nonstop from sunrise to sunset. Then after sunset, Jarasandha invited them to his palace. And he gave them all beautiful thrones to sit on, and he had a big feast cooked for them, and they all sat together and ate and entertained and had a nice night. Because they were his guests, he treated them like his loving friends. Until sunrise. Then he fought with them as his greatest enemies. And they did this for 27 days. And finally, Bhima. Because neither of them, for the whole 27 days, neither of them got the slightest advantage over the other. Because they were totally equal in strength, totally equal in skills, totally equal in every way as far as their fighting went. So Bhima said to Krishna, there's no way this will go on forever. We're so equal. I could never get an advantage over him. He could never get an advantage over me. There's no end to this. Essentially, Bhima saying, Krishna, what should I do? And Krishna didn't say anything. But he did something. Something very simple. Something little children do every day. Just to give him an indication of what could be done. And next class, we will continue from here. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna, there is one announcement. Today's breakfast prasadam is sponsored by